Emily Dickinson knew that the naked truth is a hard thing to process well. Her proviso to tell it slant is at the heart of all good storytelling, because truth settles best in the human heart when it enters gently, gradually, and when it refuses to be restrained by preference for fact. Any storyteller worth her salt will allow the truth to gestate, the story becoming the thing that emerges and tells itself. Allow me to say that in my story today, I have changed the names to protect the guilty, the confused, and the hopeless. All that is, except for me. I first heard of Unitarian Universalism when I was a religious studies major in college. Our study of comparative religions had us understanding different religions, the major branches and traditions and denominations. I was, at the time, a Catholic nun, and I was preparing for my bachelor's degree when we were assigned in a class a particular comparative religious assignment. I shall never know if Dr. Kennedy, the radical nun, picked Unitarian Universalism deliberately for me to research, but she wanted me to place it on the continuum of belief in Christianity, and after all, causing trouble is what the radical nuns do. I know, because the Vatican says so, and I was studying to be a radical nun. I encountered some difficulty in researching Unitarian Universalism. It's not at all then what it's like now. In 1978, there was no internet. You could not Google. You could not research by sitting in a chair. Instead, I had to write away for snail mail. For some reason, the Catholic library in my Catholic university was not long on Unitarian Universalism. Or any other liberal religion. You see, when you have a creedal faith, you want to make sure you keep the heresy out the back door. So I was reduced to going to public libraries. It was difficult. I actually had to search through phone books to find numbers for churches and call and ask questions, which was not particularly overly helpful in my research. But I threw myself into my studies as best I could. It was pretty clear to me that this Unitarian Universalism was quite different, and I was curious to know more about it, but it was also clear that I would have to go and experience it myself if I was to understand it. In Scranton, Pennsylvania, this is not an easy task, nor is it for a junior nun. So I signed out the one car shared by 18 nuns in my convent, on a Sunday morning and headed out to a not-so-nearby metropolitan area where I had found a listing for Unitarian Universalism. I knew some things. I knew they did not discriminate against homosexuals. I knew that women were allowed to be ministers, and I knew that they were non-creedal. They respected differing beliefs. So when finally I drove up at the correct block in the correct city, and found no signage, no indication that this was a church, I was a little disconcerted, but it looked like a church, and so I parked the car and went in. I was early and eager, and I walked into the lobby and was hoping to find some literature or information to confirm that I was in the right place. Instead, I found two people who were already engaged in preparing the music I imagined for the service, a guitar and a bongo player. I thought I smelled something vaguely familiar in the lobby, and I got closer to the musicians, and I was sure that I smelled something vaguely familiar in the lobby, but, oh, what the heck, it was 1978. I slipped on into the sanctuary, and eventually people did come, although it was getting late, and I was wondering if I had the right time. There were about 40 people scattered in little knots, bringing in their coffee and sitting and talking what to my Catholic ears seemed like a very loud conversation in the sanctuary. But, hey, this was different, and it was exciting, and my inner religious sociologist liked it. I looked around, and I noticed immediately that there were stained glass windows, but that they were blocked on all three sides by buildings that had emerged around them and soared into the sky. It was clear they had sold their land holdings. And I realized the glass windows, yeah, they were Tiffany glass windows. Someone came and sat not too far from me, and I thought I'd confirm that. I said, "Excuse me, are those Tiffany stained glass windows?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, and we're kind of glad they're blocked because they have Christian themes." I reached down and took the cross that I was wearing and slipped it inside my blouse. When at last our singers came in and did a long version of their rather individualistic music, let's say, a young man in blue jeans and a white shirt rose. He read something from Nietzsche and walked around while he did so. And for a while, the musician played in the background. At some point, he called for feedback from the assembled group, and a few people brought forward some thoughts. He criticized every thought as inadequate. Then a few people began to say a few things more, and the next thing I knew, there was a full-blown argument going on across the church sanctuary in loud and antagonistic voices, nothing like what I was used to on a Sunday morning. At some point, someone shouted from the congregation, "This is really cool!" And I sat there, my eyes wide open. I don't know how, but there was some sort of signal they gave each other to indicate that this was over and they were going to continue this discussion downstairs. A nice elderly man in a suit and tie came over and invited me to join them for coffee and conversation and whatever else was going to happen downstairs. Well, to be frank with you, the last thing I wanted was to go down and continue this argument. But he was so nice, I did go downstairs. And I stayed a while and we had some conversation. But it was so different. And he was the only one who welcomed me. So that was my first trip. I hadn't gone just as an academic pursuit. I was a restive, radical Catholic, and I just wondered what else there might be out there. The next time I was lured into a Unitarian Universalist church was some 15 years later. I had by that time become unchurched. I had given up the faith of my origin because I could no longer pretend I fit in there. And I went to a church because in the newspaper I read that the local church, I had moved across the country, the local church was offering a service, and the topic of the sermon offered by a woman minister was Unitarian Universalism. Coming together? Question mark. Well, it appealed to me that Unitarian Universalism would be coming together. It seemed to have a lot of coming together to do. And so I convinced my partner, who'd not yet experienced a Unitarian Universalist church, to come with me, and off we went on a Sunday morning. An entirely different thing happened as we arrived. We were greeted, and people gave us name tags, and we filled our names in, and we sat down. And as soon as we did, we noticed that everyone was busy talking one to another in the sanctuary. And we sat there and waited for the service to begin, and it did. With 20 minutes of people getting up and making announcements to one another. Well, maybe they're a very involved church, and so we allowed for that, and we listened. But most of the announcements were difficult to decipher. The DRE is going to GA, so don't leave any messages in our mailbox. The DRE is going to GA. I wonder what that means. There were a lot of things like that, including listings of meetings for the Democratic Party and other political activities. We were a little confused as to where we were, but soon it was all was changed because now we were compelled to introduce ourselves. I don't mean asked, I don't mean inquired, I mean compelled. Because we had these name tags on, everyone around us turned to insist that we stand up and introduce ourselves. My introverted partner was in hell. I stood and introduced us both and sat down. And then soon thereafter, we moved to joys and concerns, which was actually joys and announcements. Because you can never have too many announcements. In particular, one man rose and for 7 minutes, I timed him, 7 minutes, spoke on how we were failing to fight economic fascism in this town, and he wanted us to be challenged to do so. It's never happened anywhere else, of course. 50 minutes into the hour, the minister rose to offer the sermon. She said that due to the lateness of the hour, she would only be able to offer a summary of her remarks. And her remarks were that Unitarian Universalism could come together, but as far as she could see, it wasn't. And it really didn't matter much to her because she was retiring to Montana. Regina wondered if Unitarian Universalists had taken a turn toward the theater of the absurd. And she concluded that for herself, her experience in the Army was a sufficient dose of dysfunctional organization. She did not need this. I, however, still had a burning curiosity, and I was disappointed. So not too long after, we drove 30 miles to another congregation to see if, in fact, this was the way things were. We arrived and we were not greeted, and it was a very informal thing, and we seemed to start late. The church there also had a lay-led service on an introduction to paganism, which actually was quite good, very explanatory, offered for people who did not know much about paganism. But being from the Catholic Church, we knew all about paganism. We had purchased many pagan babies in our lifetime. Perhaps you're not familiar, but they raise money for the missions by allowing children to name the pagan babies. This means that you can only pick a saint's name to do this, but you actually get to name this child from Tanzania as Michael or Sally. And then I suppose someone in a mission someplace calls them by this name at least once. Really daunting cultural insult, if you ask me. But at the time, when I was a child, I was the champion pagan baby money raiser. Actually, we knew a lot more about paganism and about natural religion. But the interesting philosophy of this particular congregation was that children should be taught by experience, which meant they had the free run of the sanctuary during the entire service. The apex of this investigative approach to education was the 8-year-old who did sets of cartwheels behind the worship leaders 3 times until some inspired adult finally figured out what was required to stop it. And once applause was offered, the 8-year-old stopped. When the service was over, no one said hello or welcomed us. Well, some churches are like those Tiffany stained glass windows, enclosed, no light gets in. Everyone who needs to be here is here. Everyone who is here speaks the language. Everyone who speaks the language understands. And if anyone else wants to find us, they can find us somehow, somewhere. But my feeling was that I longed so much to understand this religion that I knew on paper to be born of a great tradition, including a tradition of inquiry and bravery and theological soundness and the incorporation of reason into religion so as to offer a dignified system of belief and inquiry that aspired to build heaven on earth. What nobler ambition could a church have? Surely there must be a church, I thought, where people wanted to learn, to grow in love and inspiration, to form community, so that together they might serve a larger world, which was full, of course, of people just like them who once were seekers, once were without a religion, once were bound by creeds and obstructed in their inquiry by tradition. On paper, I knew I was a Unitarian Universalist, and I'd been trying for 15 years to find out if that was true. One Sunday, near Portland, I was reading the Sunday paper. On the front section was a picture of a woman doing yoga. Not very well, but doing yoga. And the headline says, "A church come to life. A church renews itself after many decades." It was a story about First Unitarian Universalist in Portland, Oregon. And the minister profiled was the Reverend Dr. Marilyn Sewell. And the theme of the story was about how this illustrious congregation, pivotal in the founding and development of the city and the culture in Portland, Oregon, had fallen on hard times, or shall we say slow times. It had experienced adversity, including a tragic fire, but it had decided to stay in the city. And this new minister was helping to breathe new life into this congregation. In particular, one thing they had done is that when a city ordinance was brought forward to consider eliminating gays and lesbians from a protected category in the city's ordinances, that this church had taken a red ribbon and surrounded the entire block on which it sat, the city block, and declared it a no-hate zone for gays and lesbians. They had affirmed that this was a safe place for all people of goodwill. And they invited anyone who felt unsafe in other places to come and to join them there. As a result, the church had been growing substantially. They were running out of room. They were extending the number of services they offered. I handed the newspaper to my partner, Regina, and asked her to read the article, and she said, "Oh, no, you don't." "I am not going to another one of those Unitarian Universalist nuthouses. The people there are self-absorbed. They don't care whether you visit them. They don't care if you come to see them. All they care about is themselves." "Please," I asked, "just one more time. Make this the last time. And if you don't like it, fine. But I really want to find a church." She said yes. 2 Sundays later, we walked into First Unitarian Universalist in Portland. We were greeted at the door. We were asked if we wanted to make a name tag, up to us. No one compelled us to introduce ourselves. In fact, the congregation's large enough that it's difficult to do that. We were invited throughout the service to participate, and there was beautiful music and wonderful preaching and a really lovely, lovely choir and a sense of solemnity to the place. Afterwards, someone turned to us and invited us downstairs to go for coffee. And we were given special mugs and led to the newcomers' table so that we could get any information we wanted about the church. Indeed, a couple days later, a wonderful note arrived and a phone call followed. But the moment I walked into that sanctuary and we began singing the opening hymn, I knew I was home. Here you all are. I've been looking for you for 15 years. And because the congregations were taken with their arguments, because they were concerned only with their friends and the people they knew, and because perhaps they did not know how to reach out to other seekers like them, they did not. They wanted to be in one service, in one place, at one time. But a church that strewn its block with a red ribbon was turned outward. Indeed, the light came from within that church and shone to the larger city. Recently, I preached at a congregation that was trying to decide how many members it should have. 285? Or 305. I kid you not. I preached to them and I asked if they would just answer one question, then I could tell them definitively how many they should have. I pointed to the visitors and I said, tell me which ones you don't want to come back. Because every year, every Unitarian Universalist congregation receives as many visitors as they have members. Which ones shall we not invite back? People tried not to invite me back, but I'm stupid. And I don't know any better than to come back again. Here we have gathered, but the first mission of every Unitarian Universalist church is not to serve ourselves, but to remember once that we were in the desert out of Egypt, that we once were wandering. Only 10% of us were born as Unitarian Universalists or Unitarians or Universalists. Only 10%. An amazing statistic. And it is our first mission always to remember that we once wandered. That young nun, that radical nun, grew up, of course, to realize a dream she had, to become a minister and a leader in her church, in a place, in perhaps one of the few places that she could do that. She had a space to learn to respect other religions and not to pretend there's only one truth. And she did that despite the adversity that she encountered. I try very hard up the road to make my church a place with 100 doorways for all manner of people. I see you are welcoming new members and growing. Let us share this I-64 notion. Let us have a bond between our congregations to build up every possible Unitarian Universalist connection between ourselves. Perhaps a church between us. Perhaps other joint ventures. Imagine if we welcomed everyone so well that between here and Richmond, everyone came to know who we were and that they were safe among us and welcome. Then our silence would be instead like singing. We may now be a little church, but we can be to others a great cathedral. May it be so. Amen.